Okay, well, I'm Christine Schimmel and I'm with Margaret Warwick and we're at her house on Main Avenue, number 33. It's the 7th of July 2011. So would you like to introduce yourself then, Margaret?
Yes, I was born in December 1929 in Abbeydale Park Crescent at number 10. Later on, when I was about 4 years old, my mother and father went to live at number 21 Devonshire Road to look after my grandfather. And I spent nearly all my childhood at number 21 Devonshire Road. My father was called Henry Muxlow Hartley. He was born in 1898 in 21 Devonshire Road, and he lived until 1991. Later on in his retirement, he lived at 19 Bushywood Road. My mother was born Florrie Parker and became known as Flo Hartley. She was born in Sheffield, but because her mother was very tired and worn out after her birth, my grandfather arranged for them to go to Dore to a little cottage that the church was renting for people who were convalescent and who needed to come out of the dirt and grime of Sheffield to recover. When my grandmother had lived in this little cottage in Dore for a month, which was the amount of time allowed in the summer, she turned to her husband and said, "Oh, I never want to leave this beautiful place."
Lovely.
And I gather my grandfather said, "Nor shall you, my dear." And he arranged the whole of the removal and rented Rose Cottage, which is on Hillfoot Road. And there my mother lived until she was three with her eldest brother and elder sister. Then they went to live in Queen Victoria Road and rented a house which is still there. I think it's called Woodland Place. And after that my mother went to live on Baslow Road up above the Fleur-de-Lis, overlooking the moors.
Oh, the big
and
houses.
It was from
up on there
that she married my father. And then they lived in Abbeydale Park Crescent. And that was where I was born.
Right. So your family's got a long history in Scotland.
My family has, because not only was my father born in Devonshire Road, but my grandfather came to live in Devonshire Road when he married my grandmother. And my great-grandfather lived in Dore. He lived in the Elms in Dore.
And you
and
showed me that.
And he built six houses in Devonshire Road.
And you've shown me a photograph, haven't you, of your grandfather, with your great-grandfather in a car outside the Elms.
Yes, I'll come to the car a bit
later. I don't want to miss the car out.
Yes, my great-grandfather at the Elms at that time was a steel man. He had a steel firm. It went in the slump later on.
So what was the name of the firm?
I think it was called Muxlow and Knott. And my great-grandfather was called J.J. Muxlow. I think it was James John or John James, but I'm not sure. We never used Christian names for people that were older in those days.
And so how did you?
My father never even told me what his names were.
How did your father refer to him?
Well, people called him J.J. Muxlow.
Ah.
Was that J.J.? Did J.J. do that? So that was my great-grandfather. And he had a horse and trap. And my great-grandmother was very badly handicapped by arthritis in her later years, and she needed the horse and trap. And the man who looked after them, the horse and the trap, was called Mr. Dakin. And the Dakin family is well known in Dore. And my first story really is about Mr. Dakin, whom I remember.
Now, is this one of the stories that your mother told you, or is this something?
No, this is really from my own childhood. But I haven't finished all the grandparents, have I? Have I said Hedley Parker, who lived in Queen Victoria Road?
No, you haven't.
My mother and father, my mother's family was called Parker. And her father was called Hedley Parker. He lived in Queen Victoria Road most of the time. And then from 1899 to 1908, I think, they lived in Baslow Road. And his wife was Ginny Parker, and she was a great lover of people and did some writing and wrote stories in her recipe book all about Totley. I've shown you one of them.
Yes, yes, you
have. In the literary magazine. Right, well, these are just a few little stories that I've heard in the family. The first one is my own experience when I was a little girl. We went to live with my grandfather in order to look after him when I was four. So this was at Devonshire Road. And Mr. Dakin, who had been my great-grandfather's sort of helper with the horse and the trap, he now looked after my grandfather's garden, and so I used to meet him when I was a little girl, and he was a lovely man. He had a lovely sort of wizened country face with rosy cheeks and a very nice smile, and I can remember being told he had looked after great-grandfather's horse, so of course I said to him, I think he was looking after the car, you see, then. And I said to him, which did you like best, Mr. Dakin, the horse or the car? Of course, I was very impressed with the car. And Mr. Dakin looked at me, and he smiled his lovely smile, and he said, you can talk to a horse, but you can't talk to one of these motors. And it's a sort of little glimpse from the past world.
Yes, because that
the horse was his friend.
Yes, that he was at the transition.
But now he had to do the oiling of the wheels and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just quite different.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. Now, my mother gave a little talk about old Totley in about 1963, and she wrote about her own childhood, so I'm going to read these
and
notes.
And you've still got the notes,
I've still got
you?
The notes
you've
from
got
the
all
talk.
Her notes from the talk.
So
yes.
the next bit will be Mother's own notes.
Right.
She said, days of our childhood, I lived then on Queen Victoria Road. There was a well in the garden.
So what date is this, roughly?
Mother was born in 1896, and she lived at Rose Cottage till about 1899. So this is sometime between 1899 and about 1908. It's well before the First World War.
Mm.
There was a well in the garden and a pump on the kitchen stone sink. There were oil lamps and lanterns for dark evenings. And candles to go to bed, and bowls in the bedrooms. The only tap, I think, was to do with the pump. It was no tap.
So water had to be brought from the pump into the, from the well, the pump into
water
the house.
Water was brought from the well to the kitchen stone sink, and then there was a pump, and it was pumped into the sink. And it was cold, of course. And there was a fire, of course, a coal fire for the kettle. There is a family story that my uncle, my mother's elder brother, once played a practical joke by putting some soap up the pump. and it caused a terrible upset in the household because all the water came out frothing and tasted of soap.
Goodness.
Mother says that an old man called Jimmy Pinder lived in the wood on the lower side of the road. This is the lower side of Queen Victoria Road, so all the land was sloping.
He down, lived in down to the chemical yard, isn't it?
Yes. Is that, yeah. He lived in a wooden hut and he washed in a big water tub outside, and the children were terrified of him, but they loved to creep close enough to see him stripped to his waist, having the occasional wash. So Mother remembered that from about 1908.
Yes.
I gather it was quite common to meet a vagrant in your garden when you got up and you'd spent the night in your garden or in your the shelter of your hut or shed or something. And Dad has also said that happened at the Muxlow's house. And they, some of the owners of the houses knew these people, and they let them do that.
So were they travelling around, or were they living locally and just moving from
Well, some of them were well known locally, and I think some of them were alcoholics, to tell you the truth. Not all of them, but that's why Mother and her sister were always chaperoned by their father when they came to church and had a social event or any other event. They never went back through the chemical yard and up to Queen Victoria Road on their own, and they sometimes stumbled over drunks in the path. And of course my family was absolutely teetotal mad. I gather my grandfather was very, very teetotal, but there was a reason for it.
Because he saw the examples of,
yes,
of what alcohol might lead to.
Yes.
Yes. So did these, I wonder whether these people came out of Sheffield, do you think, or were they local people who got nowhere to
live? I don't know. Right. We may find out at the history group.
Yes, yes, obviously that needs some.
Yeah, another laughable tale really, but that caused a lot of trouble, was that once a Miss Dawson, who lived opposite, came in distress to my grandmother's house and said, "Could you help me, Mrs. Parker, because all our privies have fallen down into the river?" And the trouble was that all their toilets were outside, and there'd been a big storm in the night, and all the people on the other side of the road, they'd all lost their toilets.
Oh my goodness.
Because there weren't any bathrooms then.
No.
And they were just all wrecked in wooden bits, all down through the wood.
Gosh, so this is...
So grandmother, of course, had to provide what she could.
This is Totley Brook then, isn't it, that runs at the bottom?
Yes,
at the,
yes. And I haven't put this in, but I must tell you that at one time there was a big flood during this period of time before the First World War, and the flood was where the bridge is, where the Methodist Church is now, and it was sufficient for somebody to produce a boat and take people across from the sort of Devonshire Road area so that they could shop on the rise. And everybody had long skirts and they had to hutch them up and get into a boat.
My goodness.
So it must have been quite different drainage.
Yes, mm. Yes.
I don't know the date of that. Now, Mother's got quite a lot of interesting facts about transport.
Right.
Getting to Sheffield, she says, either walk to Millhouses and take a tram into Sheffield, or walk to Doran Totley station and catch a train. Morning and tea time trains were packed, and you could get a weekly season ticket for 1 shilling. The story of my father is that he spoke at a ratepayers' meeting in Totley, and one of the village women shouted out, "Take no notice of him, he's only one of them shilling a week devils." I think myself that there was a lot of social upheaval when the trains began to go, because all the business people started coming to live and building houses, and the country people were turning suburban, And I think it must have been quite difficult.
Yes, it sounds as if there was resentment of these shilling a week people. Yes. They could afford to go into Sheffield on the train.
All these rich people coming to live in our country village.
We're
in Derbyshire as well, you see. They were coming over, and they nearly all were doing business in Sheffield.
So they were going backwards and forwards and could afford to do that.
Yes.
Building the big houses on the
and,
farm.
And of course Sheffield was very, very smoky and very, very dirty. And not very good, not very healthy. And they were coming out to live in the country if they could. Now, Jimmy's bus. It was a horse-drawn cab which plied between
Jimmy Larder, isn't it?
Door Station and Cross Scythes. And the driver was Jimmy Larder.
Right.
He was a real character, Mother said. He filled his bus cram full, about 10 people inside, and then slammed the door shut, climbed up to the front seat with one or more customers, and whipped up his horse. Everyone had to get out and walk up Totley Rise Hill to save the horse. One day, he was telling someone how stupid his horse had been, and he was near swearing at him. But he just remembered in time that he'd got two Virgin Marys on board. They were the unmarried old ladies who lived in Main Avenue.
Who were they, do you think?
The time came when Jimmy and his bus had to give up, and our next type of transport was an open charabanc, which held about 24 people, and was called the Fairy Queen. This lasted us until the Sheffield buses came along, and Fred Pearson was the driver. Mother knew the Pearson family very well. They were a Totley family.
Yes, there's a lot of Pearsons, isn't there? The farming family and the nursery they owned, didn't they?
So that's Mother's notes about transport and home life.
Right.
Now, schools. Mother first learnt to read with Miss Crosslands. There were two Miss Crosslands, Miss Ethel Crossland. She was called Little Miss Crossland. And Miss Crossland, I don't really know what her Christian name was, she was called Big Miss Crossland. And they both taught my mother to read, and they taught me to read later on. They were good teachers, and in that part of Doran Totley where Devonshire Road was, there weren't many schools. The Miss Crossland started at Glover Road and then moved into the church that my family attended, the Union Church, and they held their school there during the week in the church hall.
So whereabouts on Glover Road were they?
In one of the big houses that's come down now.
Right.
Mm. But my mother only had to go down Queen Victoria Road and across the chemical yard, and she was accompanied by the family dog. They had a lovely sheep dog, and when she was 5 it was trusted with taking her to school and then going home. And she went to Dronfield Woodhouse when she was strong enough to walk up there, because Mr. Wayne, I think he was called Mr. Wade, he was considered to be the best headmaster, and Mother certainly got a splendid education and was taught a great deal of natural history, which she taught me later on.
How old do you think she was when she went up to
Well,
Dronfield?
She lived, I don't know, I think she'd be about 7 when she went up to Dronfield Woodhouse.
And she'd walk there?
She'd walk in a big group, ever so many of them went. And they were all supposed to collect things on the way up to school and have them all identified and so on. I don't quite know how she had her dinner. I think they had to take sandwiches. I don't think she came home for dinner. But she had a happy childhood, and her parents couldn't afford the fees for secondary education, but she was expected to win a Fanshawe scholarship, and she did when she was 12. She had 2 goes at it. and then she went to Sheffield Training College in 1914 and became a teacher and worked at Woodburn Road in 1916. Mm. I could talk about that, but I'm not going to because it isn't Totley.
It isn't Totley, right.
So that was my mother's school. Now my father went to school in Greenhill. He walked all the way to Greenhill from Devonshire Road from the time he was 5 years old.
Gosh. Now did he go in a group? Would he?
Yes, I think so, yes. Because there wasn't very much for them. You see, Totley School was quite a long way away. And for some reason I don't understand. And I'm not sure when Totley School started. But my thought, this would only be about 1903 or something like that.
Hmm. Well, the little schools on Hall Lane as well, Totley Hall Lane, they were going there.
But yes, when the children from all these new houses, the shilling a week children.
Shilling a week children, of course.
Anyway, my father was sent to Greenhill. And then later he went to Carter Knoll. So he went over the border into Yorkshire. Mm. And then he went to Chesterfield Grammar School and my grandfather paid fees for him. Mm. But there was a great deal of activity all around Dawe Station before the First World War because both the businessmen used the station and the children used the station.
So they would travel on the train from Durham Totley to Dronfield and then walk
yes,
on to the
Yes, they travelled on the train, both the Chesterfield Grammar School children and the Dronfield Grammar School children. It was the only secondary education open to them. Mm. We're apt to forget that Sheffield wasn't open to them. They couldn't go. I don't think they could go to school in Sheffield, or perhaps it was possible if you had more money than most of them had. They went on all down to the station, and then there was great rivalry between the children at Chesterfield and at Dronfield, and they fought each other, I'm sorry to say, in the carriages. They all had to get into their own carriage or else.
We think that's new, don't we? Children fighting on buses.
Was sort of, they didn't speak to each other when they were going to school to different schools.
But they lived in Totley and
they all lived together.
Neighbours in the community, yeah.
But they were receiving the first lot of secondary education that many, many people got. Mm. And my aunt, who went to Dronfield Grammar School from my mother's sister, she managed to get into Sheffield University. And she was one of the first two women students at the university. And it was from Dronfield Grammar School.
And what was her name?
Winifred Parker.
That's quite an achievement, isn't it? I mean,
yes. Now, at this period, before the First World War, let's talk a bit about worship. My two sets of grandparents both were almost at the start of the Dawe and Totley Union Church. And the ideals of the union were union. The people who came into the district had seen a great deal of growth of little chapels all over little villages, too many different kinds of little chapels. And the six men who first met to start the church were very, very keen that we shouldn't have interdenominational rivalry in the new area. They were nearly all nonconformist because there were Anglican parish churches already there, but the people who were Baptists and Congregationalists particularly and from other denominations, they all joined together. And at first they met in a schoolroom, But the schoolroom was owned by the licensed victuallers, and when the licensed victuallers heard that a nonconformist group was meeting to worship, they wouldn't have them.
Where was the hall?
The schoolroom that they were meeting in was near the station, near the little Masonic place that's there now.
On the other
side.
So then
they were turned out of the schoolroom, and by that time they were quite a growing little community, very keen on worshipping together. And so they bought a tin chapel, which was a second-hand tin church that I think came from Manchester on the train. It's like having a prefab.
So it arrived at Doran Totley Station, I assume.
They were allowed a bit of land on Doran Totley Station. And the church started in 1880. The congregation started in 1888. I'm not quite sure when the tin tap was delivered, at about 1889 or 10. And it stayed on the land in the station until 1908, when it was all upheavaled and put on a horse-drawn dray and brought to Totley Brook Road, where the congregation had bought a piece of land, because they could see that the people were going to live a bit further south than the station. So my parents worshipped regularly at the Union Church when it was the tin building, and my grandparents worshipped regularly there, and my parents had their childhood there and were brought up, so they walked every Sunday to Door Station, just the same as they did to school later on.
Once on a Sunday would they go?
I think that as they were older they would go twice, but the children usually came in the afternoon for Sunday school in those days. And I'm not sure whether they went to adult service or not. I know that my father fell asleep behind a curtain on a platform when he was a little boy. And it was all a bit too much for him. But I haven't heard very much. I know that when the rain fell, you could hardly hear anything because of the tin roof. And that when the train drivers blew the whistle on the train, it was very difficult if it was the middle of the prayer, and my grandfather used to go out and give a sort of signal to the driver, hoping he'd stop whistling.
So how close to the station was it?
Quite close. I'm not very sure exactly which bit of ground it was on, but it was quite near the actual station. The church was very active altogether, and it developed a literary and debating society, which my grandparents were very interested in. They were sending their children to secondary school, but they'd never had any secondary education themselves. And they loved writing and reading and debating and giving talks and so on. And we've got some books of what they wrote. And my grandmother, Parker, was very good at it. And she wrote all about her backdoor experiences and things that happened in Totley.
And there was, you were telling me earlier about the Little Theatre.
Yes. That was later. But that was in Sheffield.
In Sheffield, yes.
My family went to Arnold Freeman's Little Theatre, and I can remember watching Oedipus Rex when I was much too young to watch anything like that. And being particularly interested in the Greek chorus all dressed in white sheets.
Because it was a time when there was a lot of education organisations were starting up, weren't they?
Yes.
There was
a people really wanted to stretch their brains.
Yes.
And
yes.
to show that they'd got some. No.
And so this was happening in Totley as well. There was a movement towards education of adults.
Yes, most certainly. And of course, the Workers' Education Association was growing. And it wasn't only education, it was also simple life, particularly after the First World War. My mother started a cub group when the war was over. And it was only the 115th altogether. It was connected with the church. And before that, my mother did some social work, joint learning from Sister Edith at the Croft House settlement in Sheffield.
Mm-hmm.
And she took her cubs to the first jamboree in London that Baden Powell ran.
So what was the Croft House about? What did she do
well,
for them?
I'm not sure. We'd have to look up what Sister Edith did, but it was to do with helping poor people and improving conditions.
Yes.
My parents both went through the First World War, of course. My father in the army and my mother training to be a teacher. And they were both very, very upset by what they learnt about human nature in the First World War, and they didn't want any more war at all, and they wanted to bring up their families in a way which gave them love and care and expression of life. And, of course, the Scout and Cub movement had the same feeling about it, and Mother went into cubbing fully.
Yes, it was optimistic, wasn't
My
it?
My father had been trained as a driver, and he was in the service corps, and so he came out of the army able to drive any sort of vehicle that was really invented. And my grandfather, who was handicapped by one leg being shriveled, he was absolutely delighted and immediately went to spend his money on about a fourth-hand De Dion Bouton car. And we've got a lovely picture of him showing it off to his father-in-law just outside the Elms, with Dad driving it.
Yes, and those two women sat in the back
yes,
seat. Your
aunts.
Yes.
Yes, I can just remember the feel of the running board. I can remember playing on the running board and dancing about on it when the car was stationary in Grandfather's drive. It's a lovely old car. Now, another little story of my grandfather is in 1935. We've got now to the Between the Walls period.
Mm.
And I was 5 years old. And we'd just come to live with Grandfather to look after him. And he was a lovely grandfather, very, very good with children. And I'd never seen him upset at all. And although he was handicapped, it was because he'd had meningitis when he was 2 years old, and his handicap meant absolutely nothing to him. He did as much as he possibly could, and he danced and played tennis and all sorts of things as best he could. He even chased us on all fours underneath the table and things like that. And Grandfather, this particular day, was absolutely hopping mad. And it was the first time I'd seen anyone furious. And his white hair was flying about, and his moustache, and his eyes were flashing, and he was walking round in circles, banging his stick on the floor. I was frightened. And when I gathered what the upset was, It was because the government had changed the boundary, and at Beechiff, it had been Derbyshire all the way to Ryecroft Glen, and then it was Yorkshire, and now the boundary had gone over grandfather's head and all of a sudden he was in Sheffield and not in Derbyshire, and he couldn't do anything about it except dance about and bang his stick on the ground.
So were there a lot of people who felt like that?
A lot of people felt like that because it changed their compass point. They hadn't really... They might have earned their living in Sheffield, but they didn't live there. And now they did. And it's taken ever so many years, I would say a lot of my lifetime, to alter some people's attitude. And gradually, for a lot of other reasons besides the boundary change, a good many different attitudes and class consciousness and all sorts of things have altered.
Because we have now become part of a big city and that's
yes.
this particular
yes.
social...
Yes. One other little story perhaps illustrates the countryside of Totley before it joined, before the boundary change, and that was that Devonshire Road ended at about number 31 when I was a child, and there were fields with stooks of corn and so on, and farming. And when I was about 5 years old, at harvest one year, we were standing with the farmer, and he'd just put the haystack on top of the dray, and the horse, a lovely big cart horse, was standing ready to carry the haystack. And the farmer said to Mother, "Shall I put the children on top of the haystack?" And Mother allowed it, and I was carried up to the top of the haystack above the horse's head, and so was my little brother. And we were put right down in the hay. It was perfectly safe. But I could see the horse's ears. And as we sat there looking at this very new landscape that suddenly appeared, the horse got a little itch or something, and it just moved its foot like horses do. Not in any runaway way, just an ordinary way. But I felt the tremor through the haystack, and that was another little sense of the old world. That and Mr. Dakin.
Yes.
Yes. The horse and the haystack.
Yes.
I've never ever forgotten that wonderful experience of sitting on the top of a big haystack.
It's as if the world around you was very alive to you.
Yes.
And then with hindsight you realised it was at a point of change.
That's
the
old world.
The old
yes.
world, and the new world was maybe less alive.
As
the car was less alive.
Yes. But there were other things, of course, that people did appreciate very much about coming into Sheffield. The buses started to run, for one thing, and they didn't have to walk so far.
But there were big disadvantages. Because of the upset, you know, people were angry, like your grandfather was angry about it, wasn't he?
My grandfather really appreciated the... He explained to me that the boundary between Canterbury and York was at the same place. He appreciated the long view, that from medieval times we had been Derbyshire. Though actually my grandfather was a Sheffield man. But he was also a very illiterate, sensitive sort of man. And he felt it was a wicked thing to do.
So was there no preamble? Was it suddenly announced that this had happened?
I don't know. I'm sure it must have been done in the ordinary way and legally done. But people still feel very upset. Do you remember the upset when the counties were suddenly changed for convenience of bureaucracy? However, that's not totally, but it, grandfather felt a bit like that. Now, I put a little bit about family life in the days before the Second World War. My grandfather was a very musical man, and the thing he thought was best about life was the radio. He thought the radio was absolutely wonderful, and he listened to Walford Davis's music and taught me to listen to Handel and the classics, and they really enriched my grandfather's life. But he also had his own music. He had an American organ, he played the piano, and he played the violin, and he had a little group with a cello, two violins, and a double bass, and they'd got a sort of homemade cross between a double bass and a cello, and they, you know, tried chamber music and things. I never heard the results because Grandpa was too old to play stringed instruments when I was a little girl. But that was, you made your own music. And then we had family games of all ages joining together, and songs and sing songs round the piano. And
what games did you play?
Well, if it was inside, we played draughts and chess and happy families and snap, all these at different levels according to who was playing. And mother and father could play billiards, and the dining table made a small billiard table, and of course, later on, Monopoly arrived in the family. That was in wartime. We also had a library in Totley just about during wartime.
Oh.
That was a tremendous development.
Where was that?
That was just where the hairdressers is now, Sue's the hairdressers.
Oh, yes, where was the wreath? The laurel is on the wall.
Yes. It was there for a long time until it was built where it is now.
Yes.
And, oh, we were also allowed to slide down the banisters at Grandfather's house, so long as we did it properly. And
how do you do it properly?
Well, if you don't fall off.
All right, okay.
You don't have to do it too fast. Because they weren't very long banisters.
Right.
You mustn't do too much of a bump on the bottom. And we also were allowed to have ropes and invent all sorts of pulleys and things, and nobody told us not to. And we could move baskets between the attics and the cellars. And it was a very, very happy, lively childhood. Totley Rise was the great shopping area. I can remember all the poultry hanging up in front of the fish shop, which a lot of people will remember. It's a funny sight now to bring back.
Was that Chambers fish?
Yes. Chambers. Yes. And there was no dual carriageway, just a great bank where there was room for the other carriageway left.
So what was the road made of? Tarmac?
Yes, right. Yes. It wasn't quite as good as... It was a fairly good road that I remember, but only two widths and a big S-bend on it. And then when I was 9 years old, of course, we come to 1939, and I was just finishing with memories of the day war broke out. It's the week, really. I can't remember exactly all the events, but I do remember the utter sorrow and dismay and fear of the adults that war had broken out, and in Europe and with Germany. And I was frightened too, because I knew how much they'd gone through it. I'd heard about my father in the First World War. And I can remember the sandbags arriving, and all the aunts and uncles coming and helping to fill sandbags. And I can remember a sticky stuff all over the windows to stop the glass falling in, and the house looking very funny with no proper light coming through the windows because of all this sticky stuff. And then my father arranged to have some reinforcements done to the food cellar, and he made us a bed in the food cellar with wood and chicken wire and long bolster pillows, Victorian ticking on them, and life sort of changed, bang. But we were still sort of happily playing, and childhood was there. But I went to school in that September just for one day, and I was going to Abbey Lane then. And Miss Davis, the famous head of Abbey Lane, burst into tears. She said, "You know that something very, very dreadful has happened," and she just couldn't cope very much, and one of her staff helped her. And we gathered that this dreadful thing meant that we were going to have a holiday immediately, which seemed to me rather odd. And the boys all got up from the floor with a great big whoop, which they were never allowed to do. And I left. Miss Davis said she might never see some of us again, and she didn't. She never saw me again. And I went to Dore School after that, and we had home service first, where we were little groups of us all had our teacher in our own house for about 2 hours, and then she went to somebody else's house and had a group of about 10 round the dining room table, because Dore had no shelters, no air raid shelters. That lasted from September to Christmas. And then the shelters were built.
Right, so the schools couldn't remain in the premises because there was no shelter for the children if there was an air raid.
We were, and I couldn't stay at Abbey Lane because it wouldn't be safe if there was an air raid during the day. Yes. For me to be at 9 years old, I was 10 by that time, wandering about between Abbey Lane and Devonshire Road. So of course I couldn't go to school there.
Yes, it's these things, isn't it, that have such an impact.
Yes, I thought it might. There are a lot of people in this situation, but it's becoming time to say things like this. Mm. We had the arrival of lots of relations to live with us for a short time, several aunts and one of my cousins, because we had a stronger house than theirs. Didn't last very long. But I do remember being taught how to climb up the coal chute from the coal cellar, and various things like that.
Where did the aunts and people come from?
Well, one set of aunts came from Bushywood Row. They couldn't easily have a shelter. They did eventually get one. And the other aunts came from Aberdale Park Crescent. However, I won't go on to wartime stories. I think we'll stop at about 1940. I do remember the Blitz. For us, it was not terrible like it was for many people. But I remember that my brother and I, lying in the cellar, counted the explosions, and that we got to 126 before we fell asleep. And that when we went to school the next day, there were only about 40 people in Dore School, which usually held 200. And we sang things, and one of the things we sang, it being December, was Silent Night. And we children thought that was just absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, you saw the irony of that as children, yes.
Anyway, we were very lucky, of course, really, in wartime. And I could go on with lots of tales of all the people that came to our house in wartime, but I won't. I think that's long enough.
We've been quite an interview, hasn't it? Well, thank you so much, Margaret. That was really interesting. And of course, your memories have gone back further than your memory because of the notes that your mother made. And
yes.
That's been very valuable. Thank you.
Thank you.